live and local on AM 770 KTTH. Your independent conservative host, Todd Herman, welcomes you to The Todd Herman Show.
Day the Lord has made. The sun where I'm at is out. Beautiful morning where you're at. I hope it's the same for you. If you're listening on the podcasts, hours, days later, we welcome you to the Todd Herman Show. If you don't yet have the podcast, you should do that. By the way, if you love the show or like the show or can accept the show or stomach it or don't quite hate it, if you want to share it with other people, great way to do that is to post the podcasts on your social media. This is something you subscribe to. Ask other people to do that. That's the way the show grows. Appreciate all of that. Coming up at the 8 o'clock, you're going to hear from Jed. He is a resident of Kirkland, decided to plant some flowers in a pattern that spelled out MEGA. And when he did that, a woman came by, helped herself to some pictures of the flowers, went to social media, provided all you need to know to get to Jed's house, and then the destruction, the vandalism began. It wrapped up with a chase through Kirkland. Several times this involved the police and the comment section around this, and what they said they want to do to his home is insane, and it's in Kirkland. I have a whole segment here planned on policing in Seattle. I cannot allow what happened on Fox News to go without comment, and we'll get to Seattle Spirit in a second. I cannot allow this. Tony Fauci has stuck his head back out of his hidey hole. And Tony Fauci, who said, look, I'm a doctor. I'm not going to get involved with things related to the economy. Just got involved with things related to the economy. In states where they're having real problems, they should look at shutting down again. No one's having problems. This is the biggest deception I've ever seen. This is bigger than Russia. I'll tell you why. Russia was politics, disgusting. It was a soft coup attempt. That's big. I mean, a soft coup attempt is a very big deal, particularly when it involves the use of the intelligence services of the United States, spying on American citizens, putting people in jail when they know the charges are false. They knew it then. They put Flynn in, they put these charges up against Flynn. He's been on house arrest and been unable to go anywhere and facing a life of ruin. They've bankrupted him, Flynn, on charges they knew were false. They knew it. That's big. They misled a nation for 3 years. That's huge. These lockdowns are killing people. People are not going to the hospital because they're driven into a state of panic, thinking if they leave their house, they'll get the COVID. This is in our bubble, in our conservative bubble. It is shocking to us to hear that there are people who are so afraid they won't open the doors to their house. And yet it makes sense because of the deception. The death rate is flatlined and decreasing. As is commonly the case with these viruses, it is becoming easier to catch, and it is becoming much less lethal because of the people who are catching it. And Fauci saying states that are having real problems should look at lockdowns again, should lock down. They're not having problems. The hospitals are not overrun by COVID patients. Where there are cases where the hospitals are getting fuller, it's from people who are sticking their heads out of their hidey holes, saying, okay, I guess it's safe to come out now. This is why you will sense from me a real weight of frustration with the Seattle Times and Q13 and Como and Cairo and King 5 and Crosscut and the News Tribune and the Spokesman and the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times and the Hill and BuzzFeed. And I could sit here and go on all day. They are only telling people part of the story. and it is the most important part of the story. Let me give you this. Imagine that you're in the airport. Okay, imagine that you're ready to get on a plane, or that you're on planes and you're reading the news. And you're sitting on a plane and you read the news. Navigation systems in airliners in mass failure. So you read, they go, oh my gosh, I'm on an airplane and the navigation systems are in mass failure. You're thinking, my God, we're going to die. Does the navigation system on this airplane work? You read a little further down the last paragraph when they're on the ground. When they're on the ground, they're having trouble finding their gates. This is exactly what's going on with the COVID and the media and Tony Fauci, Jay Inslee's politics, because his politics are his policy. The half story being fed to people. Cases. What's his name? Cuomo. The one with the TV show, Chris. He just tweeted out, this is becoming a daily occurrence. Cases. Yep, more testing. Employers are demanding it. There's 17 new ways in Texas to count someone as a case tomorrow. I'm going to play for you another example. Someone in Cook County saying, if someone dies with COVID, that means they died from COVID. It would have been a shooting. She wouldn't say the actual cause of death. Talking forever. He has been so destructive to this country with this lockdown, and it is killing people. And it's not just people not going to the doctor. It's suicides. It is people relapsing on drugs. It is people who would not have otherwise died, dying from the lockdowns and the effects of the lockdowns. And this is another thing the media will not tell this story. And people at the Seattle Times, at Q13, at Cairo 7, at Como, at King 5, at Crosscut, at News Tribune, at spokesman, absolutely, literally, sickeningly ashamed of their editorial policies. Ashamed of their policies. It is the height of elitist irresponsibility. And I believe the motive is, well, all the MAGA hats, the bitter clingers, they'll kill us all if they aren't meant to stay inside. I think that they're trying to scare us for our own good. I really do. With all the of D police, I think I found a silver lining. I do. I think I found a way this can work in our favor.
And there's an altercation in the parking lot. It's getting a little rough. Can you send PD over here, please?
Okay. That'll be King County. I have no idea what the response time will be.
It's confirming that we are going to shut the tunnel down ourselves. Apparently, SDOT doesn't want to.
There was a drone to respond to an active commercial burst.
Tell them we don't have any resources available. Sorry.
Just a little sampling of the reality of living in Seattle when you need the help. And I think that this is a huge opportunity. I told you yesterday about the ice cream shop home of liberal extremism, Molly Moon's. They've decided to ban police officers who have guns, in other words, cops, because it's my understanding in all agencies, officers are either strongly encouraged or even required to carry when they're off duty because they might be needed at a moment's notice. So Molly Moon says, if you're a cop, you can't come in here with a gun on your hip. This is an incredible opportunity. Molly Moon's is announcing, in my judgment, do not respond to 911 calls from our location. If you drive by and you're a police officer and it looks like we're being robbed, do not respond. Drive right on by. Don't even give it a second thought. I think this is exactly what they're saying. Because when you put a sign up in the door that says you can't wear your uniform in here, because in the case of police officers, a gun is part of their uniform and part of how they keep us safe. That's exactly what they're saying. So Q13 Fox spoke with the founder of the liberal activism shop that also sells ice
cream.
This is like
my house. This is private property.
People see it as anti-police. Are you anti-police?
I am anti the current police system. Yeah, I think we need major police reform.
Do you understand that that may make a lot of people upset?
I do.
She says some of her employees felt intimidated.
Packing their guns, and it was making my employees feel uncomfortable.
We're human beings, and we do this job. We took an oath of service to serve at the will of the community. And I don't think that the reasonable community of city of Seattle support a business saying, we allow police, but they can't be armed. We can enjoy ice cream at your great business, but we're going to do it while armed.
You know what is not my job as an ice cream maker? The rules of when police officers can have their guns and when they can put them down. And I don't want that to be my job. I don't care about that. But if they want to come into my shop and buy ice cream without a gun, they are welcome.
Oh, so it's like your home. Oh, got it. So, like, if you are asked to go to a wedding, you don't have to go, right, Molly? The hatred I hear and am perceiving from her, are you perceiving it too? Are you perceiving hatred? I am. This is like my home. Oh, indeed. Actually, Sideshow Bob Ferguson has crushed business owners for keeping to go provide these services. I'm not going to go do that wedding. Nope, crush you. It's not your home, Molly. The law, your side has decided it's not private property, Molly. Government has decided your government, Molly, your government that you love, your leftist government you love, it has decided that's public property. It's a public accommodation. And carrying a gun in Washington State, Molly, that's a right. Every bit as much as having a marriage is a right, Molly. Now, I, though, on the other hand, am a small government, big person. I think that is your private property, Molly. I think your activism stand, your agitation stand, your leftism stand, your Marxist stand that also sells ice cream. I think that is your business. Here's the silver lining. And that was Mike Sloan, by the way, Salam, who is the head of the police union. Here's the silver lining. Put them on a map. You don't respond to anything at Molly Moon's. Take them at their word. Employ malicious compliance. You don't want us? Sweet. We will spend time focusing on helping people who need us. I think that the Seattle police should put out a list saying, I think they should put up a sign-up form. If you don't want us to come in with arms or you don't want us to come in at all, just let us know. If you're a business, just let us know and we'll publish the list. These are cop-free businesses. We're not coming in. Something tells me that despite what I'm perceiving from Molly, maybe something's gone on in her life. I don't know. I don't know the motivation. I'm perceiving a whole lot of anger from her, a tearing down of communities. And by the way, how do you build up communities if you don't build up safety? How are you building up families if you're taking moms and dads whose job is to be a police and you're saying they're so scary? My employees are scared of them. That's not building up families. That's not building up communities. These are community members, these police officers. I choose to build them up. I choose to build up their families. Here's another woman who is saying out now. Tammy Morales should not get police response at her home. She doesn't want the police. She has no problem with riots and looting. If, God forbid, Tammy Morales' home is robbed or it's burgled, the police should say, hey, listen, I don't know why you have a problem with this.
I'm willing to help do those repairs, and I'm extremely thankful that nobody was injured there. But what I don't want to hear is for our constituents to be told to be civil, not to be reactionary, to be told that looting doesn't solve anything. And, you know, it does make me wonder and ask the question why looting bothers people so much more than knowing that across the country, Black men and women are dying every day and far too often at the hands of those who are sworn to protect and serve.
Yeah, except that's just not even near true, Tammy Morales. It's not even near true. 9 cases of unarmed Black people dying in confrontations with police. 9 people dying is, you can say 9 deaths is too many. They're 9 human beings who will never live again. Yes, these are human tragedies, but what you're expressing and what you're suggesting there is that it's the majority of the time. I know the little, you know, word game you're playing there all too often. You're trying to suggest that it's often or far more often and exponentially more often at the hands of the police, and it's not. And by the way, Tammy, I don't know how that helps Black lives. Truly. I, for the life of me, cannot understand how lying to Black kids, telling them, hey, listen, you got to understand something. The cops are hunting you. Everywhere you go, cops are hunting you. If they get a chance, they're going to kill you. If they get half a chance, they're going to kill you. I can't for the life of me understand how that helps. Now, if there was truth to that, it's different, but there's not. Tammy Morales is saying here, cops are rogue, racist murderers, and looting is okay. So put her on a list. Tammy Morales doesn't like cops. She is a city council person who is trying to tear down the police. She is fine with looting. Put her on a list. She doesn't get police support. The police should publish. And you know what? Here's what Mike Sloan should do, the head of the police union. Go to Tammy Morales and say, we've created a public list. The people who don't want the cops coming to help them. Would you be the first signer? Would you put your name here? In fact, maybe I'll create the list. Maybe I will put a petition together and send this to Tammy Morales and say, will you be the first to sign that you don't want the police coming to you at all? Here's what I want. Not only a woman in and objectively anti-American tactics. And look, am I talking policy here? I want to. Her policy is to tax big business as she sees it. Her policy is to decide that certain people are rich and so she's going to tax them. That's her policy. But we're not talking policies here. We're talking her city council divided role and her rhetoric. Best to separate the person, Shama Sawant, from what she's saying with this, a policy. Listen to the words of this person and tell me if this is someone the Seattle police should say, hey, we're here to
I have a message for Jeff Bezos and his class. If you attempt again to overturn the Amazon tax, working people will go all out in the thousands to defeat you. And we will not stop there because you see, we are fighting for far more than this tax. We are preparing the ground for a different kind of society. And if you, Jeff Bezos, want to drive that process forward by lashing out against us in our modest demands, then so be it. Because we are coming for you and your rotten system. We are coming to dismantle this deeply oppressive, racist, sexist, violent, utterly bankrupt system of capitalism, this police state. We cannot and will not stop until we overthrow it and replace it with a world based instead on solidarity, genuine democracy, and equality, a socialist world.
Yeah, very, very famous. Socialism is very famous for democracy because they democratically take whatever they want and give it to whomever they choose, and they do this at the tip of a gun. It's always done at the tip of a gun. Always. If you're talking about true socialism, overthrow the American system. What is the American system? Is part of that the government? Is part of the American system a duly elected president and a duly elected members of a House and a Senate and appointed? She said overthrow the system. Does she mean just capitalism? She's just going to overthrow capitalism, but not the government. Is her policy not to overthrow? No, her policy is to overthrow the country. You are paying her to in trying to overthrow the country. Do the police owe her a response? She is saying outright, I intend to overthrow this system and replace you with the people I choose to give guns, with the people I choose to go out and force redistribution. I don't think she I think they should put together a list. Shama Sawant, Tammy Morales, Molly Moon, none of them get police support. And at the top of this, I would say Pete Holmes, the so-called Seattle city attorney. He won't charge people with felonies. He won't charge people who committed violent acts during the riots. He is saying, let's keep people out of jail. Here's one way to do that. If Pete Holmes has a problem and calls 911, the response should be, hey, listen, that could end up in someone going to jail, so we're not coming by. Is it further splitting society? Perhaps it is. But it might be something else. It might be saying, you know what? We've got people in our midst who actually need us and appreciate that we're human beings. We're moms and dads. Some of us are not great. Most of us are just 99% of us honest, good, hardworking people doing our jobs. Maybe this family in Ballard who had three cars stolen in a single night. Maybe they might appreciate a police presence.
I got up this morning and I was taking out the garbage and I looked and realized, I'm like, didn't I leave the car on the street? And when I turned around, I looked and saw that our garage door was open, and then it all clicked that all three vehicles were gone. I'm just happy none of us were hurt, because any one of us could have gotten up when they were in the house, and that's what's scary. They had to have this planned. I can't get to work. My younger son, because he lost his internship, is doing Postmates, which now he can't do. My husband has doctor's appointments. I have one kid that doesn't want to go get out and get a job at QSC or Fred Meyer's because he's afraid to bring something home, you know? So it stinks.
Her husband, by the way, has cancer. Do you think they might appreciate a police response? I think they might. And maybe they deserve it more than Shama Sawant and Tammy Morales. Maybe they deserve it more than Molly Moon or Molly from Molly Moons. We'll come back with the title. Coming up on the Todd Herman Show, a story out of Kirkland that's just incredible. Family decided they wanted to plant some flowers that spelled out the words MAGA. And that's when the attacks began. That's coming up on the Todd Herman Show. You know, the unions have all sorts of ways of playing games. One of the things, one of the favorite things to do is to get a law passed and get an exemption like the 15 now, unless you're an employee of a unionized shop, or things like, oh, we're going to control the schedules of businesses. The city council is, unless those businesses are unionized, there's also backroom deals. And to talk with us about that, the National Right to Work Foundation President Mark Mix is back on the Todd Herman Show with a local story about Unite Here. Mark, welcome back to the Todd Herman Show.
Todd, good to be on with you. Thanks for the opportunity to talk about this. It's not necessarily a good news story, but it's a story that should be exposed for sure.
Yeah, so let's expose this. I think this relates to housekeepers and the embassy suites, and apparently some backroom deals, as we said, going on. So explain that to people.
Yeah, Todd. Basically, what's happening here is the union, the United Food and Commercial Workers, or excuse me, Unite Here, a local up there in Seattle, is trying to get the employees of an embassy suite hotel unionized. And interestingly enough, they're calling on the employer, the embassy suite's management, to help them in that regard. Now, it's kind of interesting because under the existing federal law, labor policy that was imposed in 1935 under the Franklin Roosevelt administration was supposed to be written for employees and to provide rights to for employees to unionize and to associate and to bargain collectively and also have the right to refrain. But, Todd, as you can imagine, over the 80-plus years that that federal law has been in place, there's been plenty of disagreements and plenty of precedents set that basically have said that labor policy in this country is written for unions and for employers, and the employees are kind of the odd man out. In this case, in Seattle, points that out and basically focuses on that point where the employer is working with the union, to unionize employees that heretofore have said they don't want to be unionized. And under any other situation, when an employer kind of engages in trying to keep a union out or trying to support employees in decertification or throwing a union out, that's against the law. It's an unfair labor practice charge. But when the employer helps the unions force workers into unions, somehow that's perfectly fine. Well, obviously, we don't believe that's the case. And in this case, in Seattle, we're fighting on behalf of the employees to protect their rights under the act.
And there are cases, Mark Mix, where employers want to put employees into unions, because I've seen cases where there is government pressure to do that. There's government reward to do that, because there's a close tie between one political party and unions. Is that the case here, or is there some other motivation you're aware of for the Embassy Suites?
Well, I'm not sure what the motivation is, but to your point, Todd, and you're pointing out something that's occurring and occurring in state legislatures and city councils and county commissions where they say, okay, for example, the hemp industry, the cannabis industry, I think it's Colorado that said in order to get a license for a cannabis industry dispensary, you have to be unionized. I mean, those are the types of kind of, you know, hand-holding that union officials do with elected officials, and these types of laws get ridiculous as they move themselves through the process. In this case, not sure what the motivation of the employer is, and frankly, you know, if an employer wants employees to be unionized, they can help do that. But in this case, when the employees themselves are trying to fight back and exercise their rights, and the employer is providing this aid, this idea of not only being neutral about unionization, but actually providing support for the union, that's where it starts to get a little bit dicey. You know, we had a regime in this country prior to the passage of the National Labor Relations Act in the 1930s. We had this so-called yellow dog contract where employers would say, look, if you're in a union, you can't work here. And, of course, that was struck down. And now we have laws that basically say you have to be in a union in order to work. I mean, I can't understand the hypocrisy of all that, but here we are. And that's why at the foundation we find it very, very important to be out there helping employees like this in this situation in Seattle.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you do that, and I'm very happy that you do that. Look, the unions are amassing. They're fighting back because they have been really, really seeing their influence shrink in the private world. They're still widely represented in the government. We'll get to that in a second as it relates to police reform, and we've talked about this with reforms at the schools, etc. We'll talk about it with police reform as well. And so they've now partnering with government to have government have reason to set these companies up as union firms, because, of course, then the donations. And I don't know if you're allowed to talk about this. Maybe you are. The National Right to Work Foundation, Mark Mix, president with us. What, if you can answer, what percentage of donations from labor go to the Democrat Party?
Well, without mentioning the particular party, Todd, between 91 and 98% of all political contributions from unions go to one party. I'll let you draw your own conclusions as to who that is, those are the numbers we look at. And in some unions, it's 100%, Todd. It is just absolutely, over the top as for one side. And you know, when unions go to legislatures, whether they go to Congress or they go to state legislatures or go to county commissions for their privilege to force themselves on workers and get this money extracted from workers' paychecks as a condition of keeping their jobs, they have to be involved in politics because their privileges and powers are resident there. And to your point, in the private sector, roughly a little over 6% of the entire private sector workforce in this country is now under unions or members of unions, but yet we're still above 35% in the public sector, and that's really where the final frontier for organized labor is because, you know, like you said, the politics of it work for them. They elect people, they spend money to elect people, then they sit down at the table and, quote, negotiate with them over terms and conditions of employment for government employees, and it's a vicious cycle. It just repeats itself over and over and over again.
Yeah, and of course, in the state of Washington, the governor negotiates in private with the unions. No one is allowed. The members aren't allowed to observe. The people's legislature is not allowed to observe. And then the governor comes out and says, here's your take it or leave it deal for teaching this year. You're in or you're out. And sometimes the teachers don't like it. And of course, we now have, thanks to you and others and great work you've done and others of the Freedom Foundation, people have freedom from these unions in Washington state, but it's a real problem to get out of it. We've talked about teachers teacher unions protecting demonstrably bad teachers, some teachers who are accused of sexual assault against students, some who are convicted, believe it or not, allowing to keep teaching, or just ineffective teachers. And I've said it all my life. My mom is a teacher. My wife is a teacher. My mom was a teacher her entire life as an adult. So clearly, I recognize that most teachers are great people. They want to get the job done just the same as cops. There's a fascinating thing, Mark, in Seattle, where the parent union that is the union for our police officers has kicked them out. And they've kicked the police out of this union out of their parent organization. And it's optics. They are playing to the intersectional base that, you know, they're playing to the all cops are bad myth. There is, though, a reality that sometimes union membership makes it difficult to rid a police force of a bad cop when even their fellow officers know this person is a bad cop. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right, Todd, and absolutely right. And it plays. I mean, your example, your leading example of the teachers in this country. I mean, we have heard story after story about teachers who have been, to your point, convicted of violations and just doing bad things because it costs so much to actually go through the process of firing a teacher. They just send them to a rubber room and they let them sit there and do crossword puzzles and watch TV. The same holds true when it comes to the police force. 99.95% of all police officers out there doing their job, standing up every day, trying to protect citizens and serving their communities in a way to enforce laws. But there are police officers out there that are doing things that are not right. In fact, Forbes magazine did a study of 26 officers in Philadelphia that were fired for either theft, use of excessive force, or being drunk on the job. 19 of those police officers got their jobs back after they went through this process. That doesn't solve the problem, and it certainly makes it difficult for police officers who are doing right to stand there and kind of defend this action. They can't. And unfortunately, when these stories spill out, like they have in Seattle and Minneapolis and Atlanta and other places across the country, everyone starts throwing everything they got at the police force as opposed to a process of unionization and the idea of bargaining, of this monopoly bargaining power that unions have inside of these negotiations to basically demand a disciplinary process that has six levels to it, that allows them to hire an outside arbitrator who's selected by the union to decide who's right or who's wrong. And the fact is that system needs transparency. It needs accountability. It doesn't have it. And if we could actually penalize and punish these bad operatives, either in the educational system or in the police system, the country would be a lot better off and we wouldn't be having these types of tremendous disagreements across the country.
Back on the program to talk more about what we can do to get this transparency, because it's not going to happen under Jay Inslee. One of the things we can do, by the way, is try to vote some people in who actually want some transparency. Appreciate having Mark on. Mark Mix, we'll put this up on the podcast so you can get that. We'll put it up on social media so you can hear this. Mark Mix joins us. Always great to come on and hear about what the unions are doing to take money from citizens using the brute force of government. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show because there's significant breaking news. The Supreme Court, as so-called, has issued a ruling in relation to President Trump and his financial records. So we'll get to that when we come back on the Todd Herman Show. It may be, I think, the second time in the history of the program that we forestall just a few more things. This is very significant. That's coming up on the Todd Herman Show. AM 770, Judge Kavanaugh, the president must release his tax returns to the Manhattan District Attorney, Cyrus Vance. That Manhattan District is a completely political entity. And this prosecution, and everybody knows this is political prosecution. Every being listening to this knows this. Everybody involved in this knows this is political. Now, should the president... Now, let's talk about the office of the presidency. Should the office of the presidency be immune from criminal investigation? We could have that discussion. It has certainly been the norm. And on a federal basis, there is a strong argument to be made that the office is. The question here is about the president's charities that existed for 30 years. The question here is about the Trump Foundation, which existed long before he was president of the United States. It was located in Manhattan then. Not a single person in the Manhattan District's Attorney Office had a concern about it. It was well known then how it operated. They could have looked into it at any time. They didn't. They didn't because he wasn't president of the United States. There is this thing called the Clinton Foundation, which in terms of scale is orders of magnitude larger than the... Oh, is it whataboutism? No, here's what this is about. This is the poison of injecting politics into law. Because this isn't about law. None of this is concerned as to whether the president broke the law or whether the organization, the Trump Foundation, wasn't on the up and up. None of it. Everybody knows this. I mentioned the Clinton Foundation because it is evident. Top to bottom evident that that was a pay-to-play scheme that cost Americans lives. Hillary Clinton was far too busy raising money for her so-called foundation than to give Christopher Stevens, Ambassador Stevens, her direct email address. Ben Affleck had it. This is what will occur. The Manhattan District Attorney Office will get access to the president's finances because they'll say to his attorney or his bookkeepers and his accountants, you give it to us or we'll put you in jail. We'll destroy you. They'll get this. Magically. Magically. There'll be selective leaks. Remember that during the Russia hoax, which was a soft coup attempt, Adam Schiff, who has proven himself through his actions to be someone whose policies, his politics are his policies, Adam Schiff knew, because Jimmy Clapper knew, Jimmy Comey knew, Barack Obama knew, Joe Biden knew, Susan Rice knew. They all knew. Every one of them knew that Trump was not working for Russia. They all knew this when this began. Adam Schiff would leave these committee meetings and go out and float things to the press. And you had the poor Republicans sitting back and playing by the rules and not floating things to the press, not responding, simply saying we didn't hear anything like that because they didn't want to break the rules of intelligence committees. And Schiff did this on a daily basis. And on a daily basis, you had Jimmy Clapper on TV saying, well, the walls are closing in now. Now they've really got something on Trump now. You can tell the walls are closing in on a daily basis. Leaks, 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 selective material, none of it adding up to anything. So what happens is the Manhattan District Attorney gets a hold of the president's finances and they release it drip, drip, drip through leaks. Oh, it's so unfortunate, all these leaks. The leaks would be this. He'll give it to the New York Times and say, be judicious, be careful, or better yet, here's probably the stronger way they'll do it. This is actually how you do this in the black ops world of politics. You give some pieces to the New York Times, you wait a little while. You give some pieces to the Los Angeles Times, you wait a little while. You drop some over to MSNBC and you wait a little while. Drip by drip by drip by drip. This way this story has what's called legs. So this goes out throughout this entire charade, this farce, goes all the way up through the elections. There will be no curiosity about Haiti and the Clinton Foundation. There will be no curiosity about why is it that donations to the Clinton Foundation dropped by 90% when Hillary didn't win. There'll be no curiosity about paying for Chelsea's weddings with Clinton Foundation funds. No curiosity. There'll be no curiosity about the wealth that Nancy Pelosi has built while she's in office. There'll be no curiosity about the fact that when they passed union-favoring legislation, her husband's hotels got a waiver. There'll be no curiosity about the fact that Maxine Waters' daughter runs her PAC and has been getting paid $500,000, $600,000 per year. To do that. There'll be no curiosity about the fact that Maxine Waters' husband's bank was a recipient of massive federal funds. There'll be no curiosity about any of this. There'll be no curiosity about these people getting into office with a $1 million net worth and leaving it with a $200 billion net worth. There'll be no curiosity whatsoever about any of these things. No one else's financial records will be asked for. No one else is going to have this demanded of them. Only in Trump land should the president's, to the office of the presidency, be subjected to this. I'm open to the conversation from the state level. But if we're going to do that, I don't think anyone's above the law. That is a fact. No one's above the law. But this hasn't been the way it's been done. This is the first time. This will be the only time. And it is about Orange Man Bad. It's about stealing an election. It's about crushing you and your voice and your decisions because you didn't do the right thing. And it's just so weird that all of this is happening just prior to an election. We're going to see 3 million people dead. Nope. 2 million. Oh, sorry about that. 1 million. Well, it's not the deaths as much as it's the curve. We need to flatten the curve. We need to stay home and stay safe. Oh, wait a minute. There's riots and protests? No, it's all good. The COVID's gone. Nope. It's fine. Relax. Take a breath. Oh, wait. The riots and protests are over. Cases, 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 cases. The cases switch now. Boom. Finances, finances. Drip by drip by drip by drip. It's all a political game. This is the poison of politicizing offices. It's a tearing apart. It is to take what is supposed to be the law and making it into spittle. We'll come back on the Todd Herman Show with an exclusive story. Jed is from Kirkland. He likes to plant flowers. He went out to plant flowers. They spelled MAGA. And that's when the attacks began on his household. It contains one guy, as he describes it, a Jewish person and a gay person. The attacks on the MAGA flowers began. You'll hear exclusively here this bizarre story next on the Todd Herman Show.